chose as my topic today, motherhood, a unique responsibility. Now, we all know what a responsibility is because you have responsibility your whole life. And motherhood is a unique one, and unique means without being like or equal. And I think you would probably all agree that this responsibility that you're having as a mother or soon to be mother is unlike anything that you've ever had in your entire life. You can feel fulfilled and frustrated, happy and hassled, exhausted and exhilarated, overwhelmed and overjoyed, and that can all happen in 5 minutes with your children. Before you had children, you imagined what it would be like to have that sweet baby in your arms, and you just dreamed of sitting in the rocking chair and singing lullabies, looking at all the beautiful baby equipment and just planning the nursery in your mind and knowing that your child was going to be the first one ever born without a sin nature. You were just going to have this perfect little baby. Then a few weeks into it, in your sleepless, exhausted state, you wonder what in the world is going on. Nobody ever told you this was a 24/7 job that you have. Will you ever again get a shower before noon? Will you even get a shower that day? But when that baby smiles at you, all is right with the world, and you say, yes, this is a responsibility that is unique, and it is totally worth it. But the real reason that motherhood is unique is that you are in partnership with the Lord, and you have the joy of helping to introduce your children to Him and His ways. And it's interesting to me that when you go to the Bible and you look up all the verses that have to do with parenting, they all seem to involve character issues. Nowhere does the Bible tell you how to sleep train, how to deal with bad high chair habits, you know, all these things that we get so involved in. But God, in His wisdom, knew that the Bible is for all cultures and all times. And the real issues are heart issues. So being a blessing to others in the United States is going to be entirely different from being a blessing to others in a different culture. But the thing that is the same all over the world is that all mankind needs a heart change. And that is what you need to work with your children, is their heart change. The Bible never says that every woman will or should be a mother, but it does say those who are mothers should take the responsibility seriously. And one of the unique aspects to your motherhood and your partnership is that He chose you to be the mom to the children that you have. This is no accident. You know, some kids are harder than others. Some kids are just easier. Some have more challenges. If you have more than one child, you can see that immediately. God made them all different. They are one of His greatest sanctifying tools in your life. You will learn more about yourself based on your children. And He has chosen them for you because He knows what you need to be a more godly woman and to live for His glory. The word mother appears in the Bible around 300 times, and it was the most honored woman. A mother was the most honored woman in the Bible. In 2 Kings and 2 Chronicles, the phrase, "and his mother was," appears many, many times. You know, when I was teaching school, I was given a plaque one year, and I'm sure you all have seen it. It said, "Teachers affect eternity. Who knows where their influence will stop?" And that was a real encouragement to me as a teacher. But I think a more appropriate plaque would say, "Mothers affect eternity. Who knows where their influence will stop?" And the older I get, the more I see my mother in me. It's doing and saying things I not only didn't think I ever would, I said I wouldn't do. And then I look at my daughter Courtney and I see myself, and she's doing and saying things that remind me of me. And then when I look at her 7-year-old daughter Kylie and the way she's expressing herself to her younger brothers, I think, wow, this is frighteningly amazing. You know, how it just goes through the generations. But hopefully our children are learning good spiritual truths from us as well to be passed down. God instructs us on several things in His Word, and the first one is we're to be available at all times for spiritual matters. Deuteronomy 6, verses 6 and 7 refers to talking to your children about the things of the Lord when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And this involves teaching and training. Proverbs 22:6 tells us to train up a child in the way he should go. And many other proverbs address the need for teaching the fear of the Lord, drawing the line consistently, firmly disciplining, and just overall restraining our children's sin until God can change their hearts. Mothers are to be nurturers in an atmosphere of love, support, giving our children the freedom to fail, which is a great learning process. But I think most of all, the Bible tells us that we are to be models of integrity before our children. Proverbs 10:9 says, "He who walks with integrity walks securely." And that's what we want as mothers. We want to know that we are secure in what we're doing as we deal with our children. So what I want to do now is I want to look at some well-known mothers in the Bible and see what we can learn by their examples on how they walked in integrity. The first one is Jochebed. Does anyone know who Jochebed was? The mother of Moses. Okay, the context here is that the king of Egypt, Pharaoh, is upset that the Israeli slaves are multiplying so quickly. And he's afraid that if the male babies are allowed to live, that they're going to grow up and they will join Egypt's enemies and fight against them. So he figures the way to take care of this problem is to order all male babies killed right after they're born. Well, the midwives feared God more than they feared Pharaoh. And so they didn't kill these babies. And when confronted about it, they said, "Well, you know, these Hebrew women are so strong, they just have these babies before we can even get there. So we just can't kill them." So what I want to do now is read an account from Exodus. It's very familiar, but I want you to listen to it from the heart of a mother. "Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got a wicker basket and covered it with tar and pitch. Then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. And his sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. Then the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe her at the Nile, or to bathe at the Nile, and her maidens walking alongside the Nile. And she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, who brought it to her. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. And she had pity and said, 'This is one of the Hebrews' children.' Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, 'Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women, that she may nurse the child for you?' And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Go ahead.' So the girl went and called the child's real mother. Then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I shall give you your wages.'" Probably the only time a mother has been paid for doing a job. "And the child grew, and the mother brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses and said, 'Because I drew him out of the water.'" Jochebed loved her son. As with all mothers, she looked at him and thought he was beautiful. Have you ever met a mother who didn't look at her baby and think her baby was beautiful? She protected him as long as she could, and then she was willing to turn him over to God's sovereignty. Can you imagine how hard that would have been to put a baby in a basket and put him on the river to float down, not knowing what was going to happen? Then she saw her son go into the house of the enemy and become a son in the house of the enemy. She showed a self-sacrificing love, but most of all, a hope and a trust in God. Do our children see that in us? We usually aren't called on to give our children up, but there are many other times when we can show them how much we hope and trust in God. How do we respond in a crisis? As we've been hearing from Pastor Mike in this series on Joseph, it's not that our emotions suddenly go away, but our hope in a sovereign God should be at the core of all of our responses. Ray and I were in Texas this last summer in July to babysit those four grandchildren while our son and his wife took a trip. Well, after dropping Stephen and Carla off at the airport, Ray was driving back home. I was at home with the kids, and he was in a car accident. Fortunately, no one was hurt, even though he did total Stephen's car. And he called to tell me, "I've been in a car accident, and I'm fine, but I'm going to be late getting back because I have to wait on the tow truck. Then I'm going to have to get a taxi, you know, to come get me and all that." Well, our oldest granddaughter, Sierra, who was 10, was crying as she was listening to my side of the conversation. Now, she has a very sensitive spirit, and that comes with its own teaching opportunities. But after I got off the phone, I said, "Sierra, don't cry. He's fine. He called. You know, I was talking to him. He's going to be just fine." Well, I had to continually reassure her that Pop was okay, but she wasn't really settled until he walked through the door and she saw him. Well, later in the week, we invited some families up from San Antonio that used to go to RBC and who now live in San Antonio, and we like to see them when we go out there, and they're young parents with young children, and they came up to Stephen's house for a pool party. Well, everybody was very excited to get together, all these kids at the pool party. Well, one of the little boys, one of the guest boys, saw Stephen's kids diving to the bottom of the pool for golf balls. And he was frustrated because he was wearing flotation devices and he couldn't do that, so he took them off. Well, the next thing we knew, he was floating face down in that pool. Well, God in his sovereignty had a pediatrician in our group, and she quickly came over and gave him the respiratory rescue breaths. He started crying, and I thought, oh, great, he's going to be fine. Well, I didn't realize that's not necessarily true. We had to call 911. They came to check him out, and then he had to spend the night in the hospital for observation because evidently children can take water into their lungs, and you think they're fine, but they can have what they call dry drowning later. So he had to be observed for 24 hours. Well, during this experience, the adults were gathered around praying. The younger children were hovering around the action. You know, they were very excited about the ambulance and everything that was going on, thought it was a great adventure. And then we noticed Sierra. I always get emotional. She was so upset. And it reached the point where everybody eventually became more concerned about Sierra than they did the little boy, especially after we found out, you know, that he was going to be okay. So then, based on her response earlier in the week with Ray's accident and this, Ray and I decided we needed to do a study with her on the sovereignty of God. So we talked to her about how God had been in control of the whole day. What a blessing. There was a pediatrician there who knew exactly what to do. How it happened in the presence of believers who gathered to pray. How the ambulance got there right away and they were able to, you know, make sure this little boy was on oxygen and he was all right. How God was going to use that experience in the lives of the other younger children to teach them, do not take off those flotation devices unless you really know how to swim. Just so many things that God was doing. So Ray did a Bible study with her on God's sovereignty and gave her some verses to memorize. And one was Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. We realize Sierra needs to have that in her heart because, as you all know, there are going to be some things that happen that you don't know why, and you will never know why until you get to heaven. It just is not going to make any sense to you because we don't have the big picture. So if we don't have in our hearts that God is working for all things to work together for good, when these things come along, we are truly going to fall apart. Instead, we need to fall back on Proverbs 3:5, which says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and do not lean on your own understanding." So our prayer for Sierra is that she can do that and that she can learn to trust God in all circumstances. These particular ones turned out great. You know, we could look at them and say, oh, God was so wonderful. He just blessed us. Nobody was hurt. Everything's going to be just fine. But there are no guarantees about that in life. So train your children to trust God and not lean on their own understanding. We look back on that trip and we think we have never had such a traumatic trip while babysitting. Our son is afraid we'll never come back. But yet we will. And yet we know that that trip was for Sierra so that we could offer input to help her in her trust of God so that when later those things happen in life, she can know what I don't understand, but God knows what is happening. So always look for opportunities to teach your children about the attributes of God. Another mother in the Bible that we can learn from is Hannah, the mother of the prophet Samuel. Now, Hannah's husband had two wives, and he loved Hannah the best. But, of course, it was the other wife who had the children, and she never let Hannah forget it. So year after year, Hannah cried out to God for a child, and she just reached the point where she didn't even feel like eating or drinking. She was really depressed. She finally called out to God and made a vow, saying if she could have a son, she would dedicate him to the Lord. And God gave her a son. So I want to read to you a little bit now from 1 Samuel. And it came about in due time, after Hannah had conceived, that she gave birth to a son, and she named him Samuel, saying, because I have asked him of the Lord. Then the man Elkanah, her husband, went up with all his household to offer to the Lord the yearly sacrifice and pay his vow. But Hannah did not go up, for she said to her husband, I will not go up until the child is weaned, and then I will bring him, that he may appear before the Lord and stay there forever. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, do what seems best to you. Remain only until you have weaned him. Now when she had weaned him, she took him up with her with a three-year-old bull and one ephah of flour and a jug of wine, and brought him to the house of the Lord in Shiloh, although the child was young. Then they slaughtered the bull and brought the boy to Eli, and she said, O my Lord, as your soul lives, my Lord, I'm the woman who stood here beside you praying. For this boy I prayed, and the Lord has given me my petition, which I ask of him. So I have also dedicated him to the Lord. As long as he lives, he is dedicated to the Lord. So what's happening here is she is taking her probably two-year-old son, ready to give him to the high priest and leave him. And her response right after that was a prayer. And the first thing she said was, my heart exults in the Lord. Can you imagine that? You know, have a child who's two, and you take him to the temple, and you leave him in the care of the high priest because you vowed to God that that's what you would do if he gave you a son. Well, Samuel stayed there, and he grew up there, and he ministered with Eli the high priest. And we learn that Hannah saw Samuel one time a year when the family went up to offer their yearly sacrifice, and she would make him a little robe and take it to him. Eli noticed her faithfulness, and so he began to pray to God that God would give her more children to replace this one, and God did. She ended up having two sons and daughters. So what can we learn from Hannah? She made a vow, and she kept it. Definitely a model of integrity. She must have been thrilled to have a son. That was a really big deal in that culture, especially a son. And she gave him up after weaning him, not having any expectation of ever having any more children. She didn't know that was going to happen. She didn't know what his role would be in Israel. She didn't know he was going to be a great prophet, a judge, a wise leader, and the one who sadly but obediently ended up appointing Saul as king. But she fulfilled her commitments, and God honored her. You know, keeping commitments has always been very important in our family when the kids were growing up. We didn't make vows before God, but keeping your word is such an important part of character development. When our kids signed up for sports, they were there. Courtney played soccer for 2 seasons and came to hate every minute of it. It was not her thing, but she signed up for it, and so we wouldn't let her quit. So she was part of the team, and the coach counted on her being there, even if she did just stand there in the fullback position praying the ball would not come her way. If our kids wanted to get out of doing something, the rule was they had to go to the person they had made the commitment with and see if they could be released from it. I see parents and kids take commitments so lightly these days. If parents do RSVP, or if people do RSVP, by the way, which is French for please respond one way or the other, who knows if they'll even show up? People seem to decide what they'll do based on feelings, how they feel when the day rolls around. Ray and I made a commitment with our children that we would always be in church on Sundays unless someone was sick or we were out of town. We pre-decided that we would be going to church on Sundays. So if we woke up on a Sunday morning and it was cold, rainy, windy, raw day, that didn't matter. We had already decided we were going to go, so we bundled up and we went to church. So my exhortation to you is keep your word. Especially when you tell your children you're going to do something. Don't tell your children you're going to do something and then back out. Dads are especially bad about this. Oh, yeah, come Saturday we'll go out and pitch the ball or whatever, and then something else will come up. Character development is just so important when it comes to keeping your word before your children. Another mother mentioned in the Bible is Eunice, the mother of Timothy. Now, this passage means a lot to me because it also includes a grandmother. So this is from 2 Timothy 1 through 3. Timothy, my beloved son, this is Paul talking to him, the Apostle Paul. Grace, mercy, and peace from God the Father and Christ Jesus our Lord. I thank God, whom I serve with a clear conscience the way my forefathers did, as I constantly remember you in my prayers night and day, longing to see you, even as I recall your tears, so that I may be filled with joy. For I am mindful of the sincere faith within you, which first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice, and I am sure it is in you as well. Just a little phrase that carries so much weight. It was the sincere faith that dwelt in Timothy's grandmother and his mother that had been passed down. No doubt they taught him the words of the prophets, all the laws, the commandments, all about the sacrificial system, which would have been so important in the Hebrew culture. Then, when Paul came and proclaimed the gospel of Christ, they were ready to hear it. They had been prepared. The promised Messiah had come. Jesus Christ died on the cross to pay the penalty for the sin of mankind because the holy God had to deal with it. Lois, Eunice, and Timothy believed that message, and they individually put their faith in it, and they individually called upon the Lord to save them. It was the good news, the gospel, the same message that God uses to save people today and bring them into an eternity with Him. In 1 Timothy, Paul calls him my true child in the faith. And what's interesting about Timothy is that his father was a heathen Greek, mentioned in Acts chapter 16. So even though his home was divided spiritually, the influence of his mother and his grandmother paved the way for what God had for his future, which was ministering with the Apostle Paul. So what do we learn from these two women? We are responsible to show our children our faith and teach them what we know. If we have godly husbands, even better. But you can be married to a heathen and still influence your children for God. Over the years, I've known many women whose husbands were unsaved, and yet these women were a tremendous influence in the spirituality of the family. But we can't instill what we don't know. So as mothers, we are responsible to put the word of God in our hearts, which means somehow carving out the time to grow closer to the Lord on a personal level. And I know that's not easy when you're a young mom and you have young children. Well, at this point, I could also talk about the most well-known mother in the Bible, Mary, the mother of Jesus. I'll just mention her briefly because we don't have enough time for me to talk about Mary on every level. She trusted God more than worrying about her reputation as a pregnant fiancé. She had to remove herself from involvement in her son's life as his ministry increased. She had to endure the pain of his awful death on a cross. And so many things we couldn't even begin to relate to or understand. Her responsibility as a mother was unique among the unique. You know, motherhood can be overwhelming at times. And as an older woman, I'm here to tell you that it does get easier, provided you have your priorities right. First, your relationship with God cannot be put on the back burner when you have children. What you show to be important in your life is what your children will grow up thinking is important in their life. I have a friend who used to bow her head and thank God before she nursed her child. Children are observant and at a very young age, and you can teach them long before you think they understand. If you set up those habit patterns, then later you can teach them why you do what you do. Secondly, and this will come as no surprise to those of you who know me at all and have heard me, you cannot put your relationship with your husband on the back burner when you have children. One of the best gifts to your children is a strong marriage between mom and dad. Talk about security. When mom and dad are okay, all is okay with the world, no matter what else is going on. Our children loved it when we went on dates. There were so many of their friends whose parents were getting divorces that it really started to concern them, so they wanted to see that their mom and dad still loved each other. And I find it so sad to see children grow up and leave, and then the parents divorce because they don't know each other anymore. Without soccer games, piano recitals, and other children's activities, what is there to do together? They don't have anything else. In one of our parenting classes, we had one young man tell us that he thought when they had children, he just sort of put his wife and their relationship on the back burner for 18 years. Now, can you imagine what the outcome of that would have been? We've been doing these parenting classes for a lot of years. I was talking to some of the ladies about it beforehand, and we've managed childcare in different ways. One year, we decided we would hire a nanny, and so the nanny was down in the basement, and everybody brought their children. And we quickly realized that wasn't going to work, because the minute a child's voice was heard, every mother in the room was on alert. Is that my child? So we lost their attention right away. But the thing that really struck us was that for some of these couples, they had never been out on a date alone since they had had a child, which just blew our minds. So we started asking people to start finding babysitting when they came to our parenting classes, knowing that that was the first time they'd probably been together since they'd had children. And what we found was they so enjoyed just talking to each other, coming to the class, and then maybe stopping and having a cup of coffee on the way home, that they kept their babysitters and started having dates after the class ended. And that was wonderful. I guess Ray and I were fortunate when we were young parents because he was active duty Navy and there were things we had to go to. We lived on the West Coast, all of our family was on the East Coast, so we had no choice. We had to get babysitters. I hear so many young moms say these days, I would never leave my child with a teenager. Well, let me tell you what I find ironic about that. Our kids did absolutely great with teenage babysitters. They loved having them because they played with them and gave them undivided attention. Courtney has had two broken bones in her life, and they both came when our adult friends were watching her. So in my experience, a responsible teen is much safer than an adult. But adult or teen, find somebody that you can trust to watch your children. You know, contact Bob Shull or somebody on staff here at church and say, do you know any responsible teens in the youth group who live out in our area? You've just got to make sure you go on dates with your husbands. Thirdly, as I've been discussing, you need to model your Christianity as much as you talk about it. It's amazing what children learn. You know, Ray got a taste of that right after we were married and moved into our first apartment. He was looking for the hammer one day and couldn't find it, and so he asked me where it was. I said, well, it's in the kitchen in the drawer beside the sink. Well, to me, that was logical because when I grew up, my mother always kept the hammer in the kitchen in the drawer beside the sink. He said, well, why would you keep it there and not with the other tools? And it's like, well, that's where it was just always kept in my family. Did my mother ever sit me down and say, now, Linda, when you get married, you make sure you keep that hammer in the drawer by the kitchen sink? No, she didn't do that, but I observed it. And so I thought, that's what you were supposed to do. So your children observe much more than you would ever think that they would. It's just amazing. By the way, I've learned to put the hammer with the other tools now so that Ray doesn't get frustrated. They observe you when somebody calls and your spouse says, tell them I'm not here. That's a lie. And your children are observing that. Or they observe you when you sort of change voices on the phone depending on who you're talking to, kind of like you're just real sweet in some conversations and if your husband calls, it's, you know, or whatever. They observe that. You know, they're watching you all the time. So just be aware of that your character is going to have more influence on your child than any 15-minute devotion where you sit down and try to tell them about things of the Lord. But mainly, just keep everything in perspective. Some days are going to be harder than others. Some kids are harder than others, but they're all worth it. I was looking at motherhood things online, and I found this blog written by this woman. It's called Motherhood Uncensored. I don't think she's a Christian, and I have censored this because she does have some salty language, but I thought this was just so cute, and I wanted to share it with you. I was armed and ready to fire when a mom in the grocery line asked me, is this your fourth? I generally respond with a fake chipper yes, which is always quickly followed by some form of, oh, you have your hands full. I can barely even handle two, much less four. And I respond with a smile and a friendly, oh, it's a never a dull moment. I've yet to lash out at anyone, mind you. However, I'm nearly 35 weeks along, and with this heat and these thighs, well, it might just happen yet. And look, I get it. These days, four kids seem like the rarity, though I seem to remember someone telling me that four kids is the new two kids. Or maybe it's just all that TLC I'm watching, the Learning Channel, probably with the Duggars and all those people. However, this mom said, lucky you. It took me completely off guard. She knocked the rifle right out of my hands and left me scrambling to pick up my ammunition from all over the floor. She continued that she would have to wait 5 years to try to have a second. And then I bumbled on about, oh my gosh, that's so long. Oh yeah, I'm so fortunate. When you're deep in the trenches, racing around town to various activities, wiping noses on your skirt, and watching the clock for bedtime, you don't exactly rip the bare, sweaty back of your thighs off the leather seats of your car and say, wow, I'm so lucky. But I am, and I'm thankful to that mom for reminding me of such and for giving me the best comeback line ever. Oh my, four? You must be crazy to have four. Nope, just lucky. So as a way of encouraging you, I want to repeat that God has given you this responsibility. He is in it with you. He is faithful to help you, and you are all very blessed. Well, actually, I've changed it a little bit, sorry. Well, God in his sovereignty changed my plans a little bit. Ray and I pray together every night before we go to sleep, and he was praying for this talk. And he mentioned some things in his prayer that I thought, ooh, I need to include that. So this morning I got up and I redid my notes and I copied them and then I just ripped out the old notes and brought the new notes and I ripped out your table discussion questions and didn't bring them. So I thought what I would do is I'm going to ask a question and then I would like for you all to discuss it at your table and then maybe after a couple of minutes you could share something with the rest of the group that you thought was particularly interesting at your table. So, is everybody okay with that? Okay, the first question. What are some things that you see in yourself that you learned by observing your parents or your family life? So just go ahead and talk about that among yourselves.